This is the introductory file for Decatur, Part 1.
Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review for January 5th, 2017. We will begin today's recording on the front page with the article headlined, "Cat Considers Shifting Some Production to Decatur," by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer, Peoria. Caterpillar Inc. dangled the possibility of some rare good news for its Decatur plant Wednesday. It is considering moving large wheel loader and compactor production to Decatur from its Aurora factory. Caterpillar spokeswoman Jamie Fox said if the move goes ahead, it could mean about 500 new jobs shifted to Decatur. She said the factory facilities here, which build the biggest off-road dump trucks in the world, are being considered because they are capable of handling the work with a proven history of manufacturing excellence. The Decatur facility is a world-class facility, she said. A final decision on whether Decatur will get the jobs is due in the second quarter of 2017. Fox said the timing was linked to the evaluation process and required notifications tied to bargaining agreements regarding union jobs. Shifting production away from Aurora is not about ramping up manufacturing, however, but part of Caterpillar's continuous efforts to save money in the face of a grinding four-year-old slump in sales. Since 2015, Caterpillar has announced the closure or planned closure of 30 facilities around the world to cut its manufacturing square footage by 11%. In September 2016, its global workforce stood at 108,800, down from 122,900 in September 2015. Aurora, which has 800 production jobs, was also told it may see its medium wheel loader assembly work shifted to another Caterpillar plant in Arkansas. Faced with lower demand, we continue to evaluate our global manufacturing capacity, said Denise Johnson, the group president for Resource Industries, which controls the Aurora and Decatur plants. We must use our existing space in the most efficient way possible, while maintaining the ability to meet demand when it returns, added Johnson. But in Decatur, where regular Caterpillar layoffs have become a sad fact of life, even the prospect of some unexpected good news was greeted with jubilation. Without doubt, this is great news for Decatur, said Ryan McCrady, the president of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur and Macon County. And I would have to say that the credit for this primarily goes to the outstanding workers at the Caterpillar facility here in Decatur. They have an excellent history of product quality, an excellent history of being an outstanding workforce, and an unbelievable amount of pride in the work they do. McCrady recalled that in August, Caterpillar had announced it was moving some component manufacturing linked to large mining trucks to Decatur from another plant in North Carolina. That was a good opportunity to show what our workers in Decatur could do. And now, hopefully, we get to take it to the next level, he added. I don't have any doubt that the workforce at the Decatur facility can do an outstanding job. McCrady said the people of Decatur sometimes underestimate their abilities and don't always appreciate the potential locked up inside the city. For somebody like Caterpillar to look at making this investment in Decatur is significant to tell us that people outside of here see some amazing opportunities, he said. General Assembly may expand abortion access, by Dan Petrella, H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. Springfield. The General Assembly could vote during its lame duck session next week on a bill that would expand access to abortions for women on Medicaid and some other state insurance plans. Under current law, coverage is allowed only under certain circumstances, such cases of rape, incest, or when a mother's life is at risk. But a measure that has been pending in the Illinois House since February 2015 would remove these restrictions. Supporters say the proposal would provide more equal access to medical care for women, regardless of who provides their insurance. Meanwhile, opponents argue that state money shouldn't be used to pay for abortions. State Senator Dale Ryder, Republican of Mattoon, issued a statement Wednesday urging opposition to the bill. Ryder noted that the state law currently mirrors federal law, which prohibits federal tax dollars from being used to provide coverage for abortions, with the aforementioned exceptions. This legislation would be a tremendous step backward in what should be everyone's effort to do whatever it takes to protect the sanctity of human life, Ryder said. Legislators deal with legislation that impacts life and death frequently. But there is not one issue that is more directly related to life than the abortion issue. This legislation simply attacks innocent life and has taxpayers foot the bill. The bill's lead sponsor, Senator State Representative Sarah Feigenholz, Democrat of Chicago, couldn't be reached Wednesday for comment. But she told Chicago public television station WTTW last month that the bill is increasingly important in light of anti-abortion comments from President-elect Donald Trump. Bridget Leahy, Director of Public Policy for Planned Parenthood of Illinois, said the measure would help ensure that women, particularly women covered by Medicaid, the joint federal-state health insurance program for the poor, have equal access to medical care. This bill is about equity, fairness, Leahy said. It is about making sure that women have access to a full range of reproductive health care, including abortion. Ryder's statement said that the bill would violate federal law and would be unaffordable, but Planned Parenthood disputed both claims. Leahy noted that federal law allows states to cover abortion services for Medicaid recipients if no federal tax dollars are used. "We shouldn't be politicizing this," Leahy said. "This is a health care issue, and we believe women should have access to this coverage." She said that if the measure isn't approved during the lame duck session, scheduled for Monday and Tuesday, supporters will reintroduce it after the new General Assembly is seated Wednesday. New Safety Transparency Goals for Busy Park District by Justin Cohn, H&R staff writer. Decatur. The Decatur Park District has a busy 2 weeks ahead of it, with the design phase of the new water park beginning today, and a decision on Scoville Golf Club expected at the next board meeting. The Park District took some time ahead of those activities to firm up its agency mission, vision, and goals at Wednesday's board meeting. The Park District goes through an accreditation process every 5 years, and as part of that progress, updates its mission, vision, and goals. We try to update them as we go, and the changes we're presenting today are a response to the 5-year accreditation process and updates them to better reflect where we are today and where we'd like to go down the road, said Bill Clevenger, Park District Executive Director. The Park District's goals and values are integrity, sustainability, partnerships, and safety. Those didn't change. But to the integrity goal, the district added the word transparent to the sentence, "maintain a transparent, open-door policy in meeting with and responding to questions and concerns from the community." The most significant additions were in the safety goal. The district added 2 sentences, "establish and maintain effective cybersecurity policies, procedures, and protocols for equipment and software, updating as required," and "provide a safe, secure visitor experience with support from our Park Police Division. The board approved the updated mission, vision, and goals quickly, eager to get to the more anticipated tasks. During his staff report, Ryan Raleigh, Director of Operations, said district staff will have its first meeting with Aquatic Center Architect Architectural Expressions and Councilman Hunsaker today to begin the design process for the water park. During the board meeting comments, President Bob Riley II said the board would be ready to further discuss Scoville and make a decision on its future at the next board meeting at noon, January 18th. Also at Wednesday's meeting, the board held a public hearing concerning its intent to sell $4.8 million in general obligation park bonds for annual expenses and $11 million in alternate revenue source bonds to fund the Aquatic Center. There was no public comment. The board had previously approved permission to pursue both bonds. During the winter, the Park District maintenance staff spends much of its time on tree trimming and removal. There are large piles of wood at both Fairview and Nelson Parks, and some other neighborhood parks, that are free to whoever can haul it away. The district only asks that the wood not be cut on its property. Promoting Arts Calls Mattoon Native by Rob Stroud, Lee News Service writer. Mattoon. Julia Degler Whitmore, a Mattoon native, has a lifetime of experience in the performing arts, on stage and behind the scenes. Whitmore is putting that experience to work, organizing and promoting art programs in her hometown as the new part-time coordinator for the Mattoon Arts Council. Mattoon has always had super talented and gifted people. They need outlets, and they need opportunities to present those talents, Whitmore said. She got started in the arts at a young age while dancing at the ballet studio of her mother, Barbara Degler. Whitmore said she took part in musicals at Mattoon High School and then studied music and theater in college while also pursuing her interests in poetry, short stories, and sketching. Over the years, Whitmore has performed as a singer on her own and with various groups. Most recently, Whitmore was publicist and a vocalist in Rod Sickler's A Christmas Carol production in Champaign. Her husband, Jim Whitmore, was assistant director and associate producer. "We threw ourselves into A Christmas Carol, and we had a blast," Whitmore said. In addition, Whitmore founded the Dragonflies Performing Arts Program for Children with Special Needs in 2011 and obtained a Pepsi Refresh Challenge grant to help equip this program. She continues to serve as the director for Dragonflies. Whitmore says she has experience in developing goals for art programs and then following these goals through to fruition. Whitmore said she looks forward to helping the Mattoon Arts Council fulfill its goals and to bringing new ideas to the organization as well. City Tourism and Arts Director Angelia Burjat said Whitmore is going to be a great asset to the Arts Council and has a real love for her hometown. She said Whitmore has a long history in the arts, personally and professionally. She has been involved in promoting and executing a number of successful creative endeavors, Bridget said. Her enthusiastic approach to supporting the creative community will benefit the Mattoon Arts Council by bringing people together in their quest to offer more artistic opportunities. The first event on Whitmore's schedule is the Arts Council's annual quilt show, January 28th and 29th. Entries will be taken through January 14th. Other upcoming events include a quilting workshop February 18th, a Learn to Draw Faces workshop March 11th, and the annual Artworks Festival June 10th. Whitmore said the 2017 artworks will be able to use the new Heritage Park, which offers a band shell. She said the park has joined the restored Mattoon Depot's Lone Elm Room as a venue for special events downtown. She works out of the Mattoon Arts and Tourism Office in the Depot. The Arts Council offers a donor tree on the north wall of the Lone Elm Room to list the names of donors. Whitmore said leaves on the tree are still available to list the names of additional donors. Watkins Looking to Help Decatur Grow by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Marty Watkins is seeking to have an impact on changes residents desire by running for a spot on the Decatur City Council. Watkins, 54, is one of six candidates who filed to run for three open positions in the April 4th election. The others are incumbent Pat McDaniel, along with current Decatur Park District Commissioner Chris Riley, former Macon County Board member and longtime Decatur Athletic Club tennis director Chuck Kuhl, Millikan University biology professor David Horn, and businessman Andrew Apel. Watkins, who is a disabled veteran and Eisenhower High School graduate, said by being on the city council, he can help make Decatur a more appealing place to live and work, partially by building on what has already been accomplished. Watkins is willing to contact businesses as necessary to aid in economic development efforts. We have a lot of room for growth, Watkins said. Decatur can be one of the greatest communities on the map. After seeking a seat on the Macon County Board in the November election, Watkins turned his attention to the City Council. He said government entities in Decatur need to work together as much as possible. He supports finding ways to bring in more revenue without creating a tax burden for residents. Part of his focus is on improving the outlook for youth in the community. Watkins is a minister at the Church of the Living God, 400 South Franklin Street, along with being a former Macon County Auxiliary Deputy and former Macon County Correctional Officer. More summer employment opportunities can improve the outlook not only for the youth involved, but the community through a more trained workforce, Watkins said. We must train our children how to be an asset to our community rather than a liability, Watkins said. Neighborhood revitalization efforts include reducing property taxes and encouraging rehabilitation of properties, along with the possibility of offering incentives to property owners to bring vacant houses up to code, Watkins said. As the campaign continues, Watkins plans to meet with residents and listen to their concerns. I want to be listening to the people, Watkins said. Everyone has something important to say. People are wanting a change. Watkins comes from a family with a history of being active in Decatur. His father was part of one of the first black families to settle in Decatur, and other family members have contributed to the community over the years. By running for elected office, Watkins hopes to pick up where they left off. Mount Zion Expands Village Fleet by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Mount Zion. After nearly a month off, the Mount Zion Village Board helped to rev in the new year with several vehicle purchases. The three include a 2017 police interceptor and two John Deere mowers for the Public Works Department. All the purchases were unanimously approved by the board. The purchase of the police vehicle, a 2017 Ford Explorer, will cost $27,739. That cost is split between the village's general fund and the games fund, a revenue received from the state of Illinois from games at the Majestic Hall, which may only be spent on police-related items. The village is making the request now to take advantage of the discounted prices offered through the State of Illinois Purchase Program, said Village Administrator Julie Miller. We have to get them ordered now, or else a lot of the state bid pricing and all these discounts disappear, she said. A lot of these companies only allocate so many vehicles, so if you don't order your interceptor as soon as possible, you could wait a whole year before you can order one again. New police vehicles are generally in service for about 7 years, said Police Chief Adam Skundberg. After that, vehicles that are still operational are often cycled out to be used by the village administration or by the Public Works Department for the rest of the vehicle's life. The other vehicles purchased were two John Deere mowers. The two mowers, in addition to an annual $550 maintenance plan for each, will cost a total of $15,100. The actual cost of the two new mowers will be $23,800, but as part of the purchase, the village will be trading in two of their mowers to Sloan Implement for a total of $10,900. The police vehicle will likely arrive in the summer, while the hope is the mowers will be available by the mowing season in spring, Miller said. Tuesday's meeting was the first held since December 5th. Its December 19th meeting was canceled due to a lack of action item. Decatur man charged with sexual assault of adolescent girl by Huey Freeman, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Jonathan R. Galley, 47, of Decatur, is being held in jail on $500,000 bond for allegedly sexually assaulting and abusing a girl younger than 12 repeatedly for more than 11 weeks. Galley was arraigned Wednesday on 4 Class X counts of predatory criminal sexual assault of a child, each count punishable by 6 to 60 years in prison, and 6 counts of aggravated criminal sexual abuse, 3 to 7 years on each count. The incidents allegedly occurred at Galley's house in the 800 block of West Olive Street between October 1st and December 19th. Decatur police officers were sent to HSHS St. Mary's Hospital on December 22nd on the report of a sexual assault. A relative of the victim told police that the girl had been sexually abused on several occasions by Galley, who was acquainted with the family, said an affidavit by patrol officer Eric Wagoner. The relative told police the victim reported that Galley asked her to play a game with him. He would then disrobe and sexually assault and abuse her. An emergency room nurse told police that the victim related to her details of the alleged incidents. Those details matched the narrative the victim told her relative. A few days later, Officer Wagner, on temporary assignment to the Detective Bureau, interviewed another relative of the victim. That relative said the victim reported that Galley performed acts with sex toys on her. The victim told that relative that there were 3 sex toys, which were purple, blue, and white, with pink polka dots. She said those items were stored in a nightstand drawer in Galley's bedroom. That relative showed me photographs he had taken on December 23, 2016, after having spoken with the victim about this incident, Wagoner wrote in his statement. The relative said the photographs were of the master bedroom and the residence of Jonathan Galley. He took the photographs after hearing the victim's reports about the sex toys and other items. In one photograph of the opened nightstand drawer were what appeared to be 1 blue and 1 white with pink polka dot sex toys. Photographs also captured other items described by the child that were used during the incidents. In a forensic interview at the Child First Center on December 28th, the victim reiterated what she had previously told her two relatives and the nurse. She told the interviewer, Jonathan had shown her pornography on his computer on several occasions. She said some of the pornography depicted teen girls, which she knew were teens because it said so in the titles of the movies. Galley, who was assigned a public defender, is due in court for his preliminary hearing January 18. Promising start for Decatur's year in economic development by Chris Lisvardi, H&R staff writer, Decatur. With $71 million invested in projects last year, Patrick Hoban sees plenty of economic development activity in Decatur. Hoban hopes a similar level of progress continues into the new year, which he said is off to a promising start. Having the $8.7 million building permit for a new law enforcement training center on the city's south side is encouraging just a few days into the year, said Hoban, the city's economic development officer. That kind of development triggers more projects, said Hoban, who spoke Wednesday during the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce Business Breakfast at the Decatur Club. Having that out there is a destination that creates more opportunities. Despite being a prime area for development, Hoban said the area near the training center previously has been slow to develop. More is in the pipeline throughout the city as other projects become reality, he said. Development efforts can take time, as a new Holiday Inn on the city's north side has been 7 years in the making, Hoban said. The level of economic development activity is part of a team effort, Chamber President Marinda Rothrock said. It takes all of us, Rothrock said. It's so crucial to our community. Hoban said everyone in the community can help with development efforts. He said a series of monthly lunch and learn meetings is being developed to discuss various economic development topics, including business retention, foreign direct investment, and marketing. Maintaining an attractive business mix starts with shopping locally, Hoban said. He said the popularity of online shopping has put pressure on the local retail market. Online has changed everything retail-wise, Hoban said. Every time we go online is helping somebody else. Hoban said supporting local businesses is critical to ensuring the money being spent can be used to support needs within the community. He said, buying locally is all about consumers voting with their wallets. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review for January 5th, 2017. Please stay tuned.